This is the Dave Durant Show with Dave Durant.
Welcome to the Dave Durant Show. This week we have a great guest, Dr. Sean O'Meara, who has some interesting facts for our audiences today on health, fitness, and of course, how that plays into our faith. But today we're going to get into a special topic. Dave is going to speak on the five subconscious ways you either repel or attract others. Dave, the five subconscious ways you either repel or attract others. Please enlighten us. What specifically do you mean by this?
Yeah, and by the way, I love this because in a way, it's related to what Dr. Sean is going to be talking about in the second segment. But there are all sorts of unconscious or subconscious ways that we either attract people and therefore we can be more influential and lead them, or we repel them in what we do. And this can even be in friendships and other places in life too. We're going to get into what those are, but the reason that they're unconscious is because we're making decisions about other people when we hear them and see them and observe them all the time, and their value judgments. Now, some people go, oh my gosh, that sounds so horrible because we can't be judgmental and, you know, only God can judge the soul and all these things. Well, yes. Okay. But I actually want to get into that too, because there's a lot of things that are hijacked and for the purpose of either, you know, being like a shield for bad behavior. Like when people do this, like they'll have a nefarious intention. So they'll give you a quote of something and use language against you, just like Satan used, you know, the scriptures against Christ, or at least attempted to manipulate these things. And here, one of them is that we can't judge. Absolutely. You wouldn't even be able to get dressed in the morning, pick something to eat and go to work if you couldn't judge things. You have to. This is a good thing to eat. This is a bad thing to eat. This is a person I should be around. This is a person I should not be around. This is a person I should trust. This is a person I should not trust. This is a company that's trustable. This is a company that is not. I should turn left or I should turn right. I should trust the value of this person's decision making in the car next to me coming toward me or not. All day long, we're making judgments. What we can't do is judge the status of somebody's soul. Okay, but we can judge the objective thing they did. That, objectively speaking, was murder. That, objectively speaking, was fornication, whatever it happens to be. We can objectively judge these things, but we can't know whether the person had culpability, because that's God's job to do. Well, the other thing we can do is we can argue with the judgments that people are going to make about us unconsciously or subconsciously by like putting it back on them and saying, well, you're a bad person for making this judgment about me. You need to care about me from the inside out. Well, I don't see your inside. So I make assumptions about your inside from what I see outside. And this really matters. And if we want to be influential in life, we can't just run around there with all sorts of externally bad attractants, or I should say, there's really not an externally bad attractant. It's actually an external repellent. We can't have all these repellents and then blame everybody for not accepting us. We have to say, this is actually the way the natural world works. So therefore, I'm going to actually embrace those very things which will make me more attractive to those around me. And that's what this list is about.
Well, I noticed there's actually a total of seven subconscious ways you either repel or attract others in this list that we have in front of us, Dave. So let's go through one by one. What would you say, in no particular order, number one would be?
Yeah. And by the way, there are more than seven. I'm just bringing out seven very important ones here to talk about. Okay. The first one that we're talking about, and again, they're not in particular order, is neatness, tidiness. You know, nobody goes, they were a slob. It was awesome. I was so impressed when I went to their house because how sloppy it was.
Right.
No, but if somebody's a slob, you walk in their house and you go, oh my gosh, they're a slob. Even the way you say it sounds like a repellent. You are like disgusted by it, right? Now, the slob will oftentimes make excuses for their behavior and they say it's not that bad. And they'll be basically kind of looking at the other person as though they're bad for making the judgment, but they're not. Sloppiness. Now, by the way, then there's a lie, which is like cleanliness is next to holiness or something like that. I don't know. I can think of certain things by way of, laziness and other things that would you know, make something be at least venial in the realm of sins. And then maybe if it's excessive because there's no good health affiliated, that it could lead to a more mortal status. But I'm not even trying to put holiness in this. I'm just talking about the attractant or the repellent. It is repelling to people when people are sloppy. But yet at the same time, oh, I walked in and the place was meticulous. It was so nice. It was so well put together. I liked it. I felt comfortable because of that. Now, of course, if you're around a person that goes beyond neat and tidy and meticulous and they become, you know, kind of, you know, OCD about it, then there's a more problematic thing. But you can't really tell that from when you see the tidiness. You can see it in the behavior of the tidiness behind it. But the neatness of a person, this also includes their attire. Are they neat when they're around you? Now, there's also appropriate to the circumstance attire when it comes to neatness. Like if you go to a ball game and people are hanging out and it's supposed to be social and you are buttoned up in a suit and tie, super neat, well, that doesn't fit the circumstance. And because it doesn't fit the circumstance, it's not neat according to the circumstance. So we can't just say that you always have to look a particular way. Sometimes that more casual thing. But are you sloppy casual? You've got like mustard stains on your shirt. Is it entirely wrinkled? Did you go so casual that you wore your pajamas to the game as opposed to wearing some jeans and a t-shirt that matches the theme of what's taking place? So you can be neat and tidy and put together. This also includes groomed. You know, are you well groomed and are you clean in your presentation? Why do these things matter? Well, I'm not just giving a hygiene course here. They matter because you're less influential if you mess them up. You want to influence somebody while they're looking at you repelled? No. Like, it's like if you're talking to somebody at a dinner conversation and they're mashing food with their mouth open and you can see their food being worked over and some of it's kind of halfway out their mouth. I'm not listening at all to what you're saying because I'm disgusted right now. And this kind of falls in the banner of neatness. I am so distracted by these other things that I can't hear what you're saying. Please get that off your chin. So I'm not saying that they're a good person or a bad person or holy or not. I am saying that I am not influenced by you because I am distracted by this. Now, I also know this. Sloppiness, as opposed to neatness, also says you probably have way more vice than virtue. You are not maybe punctual because sloppy people are lazy and sloppy people are generally not on time. They don't care about it and they have a low standard. So there's all sorts of things that I'm making an unconscious, whether it's fair or not, observation about somebody. And the reason that it is fair is because there are patterns in people like this that you see. And it is fair to say, I mean, it's like almost like the natural thing that we have that when you see a snake, you coil back. You want to know, is it poisonous or not? But right away, you just jump back because it's a snake. Well, if you see laziness, right away, you coil back and you say it's probably associated with vice. And maybe this person is not too tremendously vice oriented, although there is vice there. There is definitely some vice there in sloppiness. But that's, it's just a natural thing. It's just the way of the world.
Yeah, absolutely, Dave. I think the second point here kind of ties nicely into this one as well, you know, whether it comes to routines or just even overall, not to, you know, be picking at people's attractiveness levels based on their physical appearance. But at the same time, number two plays a role into this. What is that, Dave?
Yeah, that's health and fitness, which is separate from attractiveness. Now, there are certain advantages that very attractive people have to influencing people. We know that. I mean, just look at the influencers online. Some of them have literally nothing to say, but they're very, very easy on the eyes. Okay. But that's not what I'm talking about here. Why? Because that's not something that we can entirely control. What we can control, though, is our health and fitness so that we can maximize our own healthy appearance. And this, by the way, some people go, oh, you're too fixated on looks here. No. I am fixated on influence. And if you want to influence somebody effectively, it is best for you to not have to fight against the things that reduce your ability to influence. And when a person says, this person seems to have their physical acts together, what does it automatically say? They have discipline and self-control. They might not have it everywhere, But at least you see that they have a certain amount of discipline and self-control. Now, can this actually go the opposite direction? Yeah. Could you say they have obsessiveness? They're obsessed with their looks, and you can recognize that. And all of a sudden, their looks and the way they take care of them are so over the top that you can recognize maybe a vice in that. Yeah. So I'm not saying that there's this one element of this only, but I'm saying there's a range to be in, kind of a spectrum on this. And a healthy person who you can tell, wow, they have the discipline to restrain in what they're consuming and to exert a certain amount of physical activity in order to have a certain amount of health, they likely will generalize that to other places in life. Now, you and I both know not everybody does. That's right. Why this is not a litmus test for a good person or a bad person. But if you are trying to say, listen, I'm trying to increase my game of influence here, and where are the what are the ways that I can actually shave things off, kind of like a car that's trying to reach maximum speed and you want perfect aerodynamics for efficiency? You know, there are good cars that have a little less aerodynamics than others, but if you make them perfectly aerodynamic, they're going to perform a little bit better. So again, that's what I'm saying here, is if you're trying to increase your level of effectiveness or efficiency, get in shape, okay, be neat, and you will reduce certain things that otherwise would be in the way. And you're going to notice it too, because if you go from being out of shape and in shape, watch how many people go, oh my gosh, you look great. How did you do that? Now, this is one of the things that the doctor said, Dr. Sean, and it's a great point that he's making, and I'll let him say it a little bit clearer, but he's kind of making the point that unconsciously, we see healthy people as people who can provide something for us. They can protect for us, and they can provide. So therefore, we're attracted to them, even on this kind of like, you know, natural level, which says, I want to be affiliated, associated. And he goes in a little more detail on that.
And just to highlight this point a little bit more, Dave, I think you do make a great connection between your physical health, right, and your mental health, and how much that plays into you, your ability to influence others.
Yeah, because when we have that physical health, our brain, which is an organ, is going to start to, you know, function more effectively and more efficiently. Additionally, by the way, we're going to bring energy to the events that we're trying to bring in order to influence people. And energy is a part of the fitness and health thing. You know, you're around somebody, hey, I was really moved by them. They were just so tired. They just didn't seem to be all the way mentally there. And they kind of seemed a little sloppy and out of shape. No, nobody says that complimentary. But, oh, this person's buttoned up and they had energy and they were there for me and they were super sharp when I was talking to them. That ends up mattering.
And I think it's a good segue on point number three, Dave. Which one is that?
Point number three is vocabulary. This is also a very important one. And one of the reasons that all these points are so important to kind of look in together is because, you know, I think about St. Thomas Aquinas. You know, they you know, apparently he was a kind of a stout gentleman, but what did he have? An incredible vocabulary. I would imagine he had a particular tidiness about him in the way that he was organized and wrote. There are other moral components about him that were attractive because they said strength. This is one of the reasons that I don't want to put a condemnation or an endorsement on the need for all people to be the same, because there are some people that can kind of make up for certain other areas by saying, okay, so in other words, you see the person that's out of shape and you think they lack discipline. You talk to Thomas Aquinas, St. Thomas Aquinas, or read his writings, and you immediately say, discipline. Yeah. This is using it in a different way. So it's not that everybody needs to use all of these at the same time, but all things being equal, I mean, you know, listen, why not have all of them? And I think it says a little bit about the way that you consume things as well, too. But vocabulary really matters. And it's... If you want to learn to how to have a greater vocabulary, you need to listen to people who have greater vocabulary. It's intimidating at first. A lot of people go, I didn't understand that. And I remember that. When I first, I didn't study philosophy at all until I was maybe 27. I'm a full-grown adult, and there were terms that I never heard before. And when I was trying to understand the way they came together, or even theology, and then a lot of things just by, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I'm a fan of science, so I like to learn about science. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to get better at this, I'm just going to have to listen more, and then I'll get the context of it. And if I listen to this smart person in philosophy, and this smart person in theology, and this smart person in medicine, this smart person in other forms of science, there's going to be things that blend together here, and I'm going to see how these things actually fit, and I could apply them to my discipline or application of business itself, and they made me richer in that regard and increase your vocabulary. If you want to have an increased vocabulary, be around people who have an increased vocabulary. That's how little kids learn it. A little kid learns vocabulary by being around people who have it. And they all of a sudden are kicking out words they never even thought they learned, but they did. And it says they're intelligent. So if you look at this, neatness says there's a certain amount of strength of character. Being in shape says there's a certain amount of strength of character. Vocabulary says there's a certain amount of strength of character that they were willing to learn. People are utterly attracted to strength and they're repelled by weakness. So each one of these will have a component of strength inside of it. And that's one of the reasons that people are attracted to it.
Yeah, these are some great points, and I hope you guys are taking notes because I certainly am making a lot of mental notes here. What is the fourth subconscious way to repel or attract others, Dave?
It's family status and friend status. And again, I want to be very clear about all this, okay? Some of the most influential people in the world did not have every single one of these things, okay? You could be a very simple person that's not highly educated, but you are super moral. And so because of, and when people are around you, they're like, I sense holiness here. And because of that, you're going to have a certain amount of influence there that's incredible. Now, that person may not say, let me give you a business plan and influence you there. They may not say, let me help you become an Olympian and help you there. But they still have a certain amount of influence and they're a good steward because that's where God wanted them to be influential. So the really important part of this topic is to not take all of these things and to somehow confuse a judgment toward some people who don't have one or two or three of these, but still have influence. And you will see how some of the most influential people don't have some of the upcoming ones, but they have others. Okay. On family status, think about the mob. You know, the mob always tries to look like they've got good family, but they're really horrible people. And they will oftentimes be cheating on their family or hurting people that are in their family because they are not honoring what they're supposed to do in the family outside of their own personal family. And even politicians. So there's a lot of politicians. The family doesn't mean anything to them, but they present the image of family. Why? And also of friendships. But they're not even very good friends to people. Because if you have a family and you have friends, it says that you're willing to sacrifice and you are loved. Well, if you're willing to sacrifice, I know you'll sacrifice for me too. Okay, which means that the advice that you give is not going to be self-serving, but it's going to be just for my best interest, and that you're lovable, which means that I could probably love you too, and that you're loyal, and that other people are loyal to you, which means that you've earned loyalty. So these are things that are important for people to understand about just the way this plays out, that there's a presentation of family that can increase a person's ability to influence, to attract, or to repel. Now, not everybody's going to have the same family status. And there's a lot of people, for example, even people in religious life who, you know, are not married, so they can't point to that family. And some of them maybe didn't even come from a great family. So here they are, unable to try to wow a person with their familial relationships, yet they're incredibly influential. Why? Because even though they might not have had it, they value it. And the way they talk about it matters. And the way that they can maybe provide advice on it. And the way that you see that although their family wasn't like that, they have friendships that they have forged this particular way. So they say things, a lot of things about people. Now, none of these things you should do as a facade. You shouldn't just like pick one word and try to throw it out there in a fancy way where you don't understand the context to impress people with a vocabulary. Develop your vocabulary so it's real. Don't just have the appearance of health. Get yourself healthy. Now, there are certain things that for all of us are outside of our control. I'm not talking about those. But many of the things we do control, where we actually are self-inflictedly chronically ill in certain things, and the doctor is going to talk about how to get past some of that, too. But these things, they really matter.
And we have three left on the list, Dave, but I'm going to go ahead and pause you here because we have some important messages from our sponsors here on Relevant Radio. We'll be right back with the three subconscious ways you either repel or attract others to complete our seven.
This is the Dave Durand Show with Dave Durand.
All right, we're back with the Dave Durant Show. Welcome back. We have the 7 subconscious ways you either repel or attract others. And so we've been going through this list one by one. Dave has gone through each one of these points, and we have 3 left on the list. So picking back up from where we left off with family status, that was the 4th one. The 5th one is...
Yeah, and just to reset the stage, neatness is the 1st, health and fitness is the 2nd, vocabulary is the 3rd, and then family status we talked are 4th. Just one last point on family status. It's not necessarily you need one particular family status. It's that you have a respect for family. Like, there's brokenness in family kind of affects people. They say, well, what's wrong with that person? Now, many of us come from broken circumstances. And so you just, that's where you are. But what are you doing now? How do you live your life now? What do you do in reparation of that sort of thing? So that you can, first of all and foremost, the family is important to you. Okay. But then secondly, you will increase your level of influence because of it. The 5th thing, though, is conviction. This is a huge one. So unlike some of these on the list where you would say, well, there are some people who are more or less neat and still have been influential. Sure. There are some people more or less healthy and has still been influential. Sure. There are some people with more or less a better or worse vocabulary and are still influential. There are people of all different family status has still been influential. Yeah, granted. Conviction, that is not the case. If you're going to be influential and you're going to attract people, it is going to be because you have conviction. Ironically, there are people who attract people online because they have an incredible... this sounds like irony. It is. They have an incredible conviction and no conviction at all. They literally have a stalwart belief in nothing. And they come off like laissez-faire, but it's the same as the person who says there's no such thing as absolute truth. They literally use an absolute truth, a full conviction, to say they have no conviction in anything. But it's their conviction in nothing, ironically, that attracts equally weak-minded people to their philosophy. So, but conviction is the thing that matters. You know, people that are, you know, that's why, generally speaking, you can have a very bad idea, but a lot of conviction behind the idea, and you will attract people to it. Now, I'm not telling anyone to have bad ideas to attract people to, but most of us go through a progression of understanding of things in life, and we'll have conviction in it, and we might mislead people because we were misled, but we at least were honestly misled. I mean, I think of St. Paul when I think of this, right? He was a zealot persecuting Christ, but he did it with conviction, and it was kind of credited. Well, it was directly credited to him, as the Bible tells us, right? And then he turned that zeal towards something that is real. But it is true that conviction is one of the things that without question says strength and I'm attracted to, which is why we have to pay attention to seeking what is true and knowing so that we're not misleading people with the convictions that we have. But don't be afraid of expressing your convictions and the level of belief that you have in something, because it is very attractive to people.
This 6th one is crucial in leadership, in my opinion. All of these are. But I think this 6th one will maybe shock some of you, maybe not. I don't know. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I think so. And I don't think people should get fixated on this, because there are some people that get fixated on it and they become ambitious, which is... and let me tell you what it is, and then I'll tell you why ambition is so bad for it. But it's a title. An ambitious person is a person who wants recognition and status and a title that is outside of their realm of performance and what is deserved. Whereas a motivated or a driven person is driven to earn the respect and the title. So you need to be a little cautious of ambitious people. I do realize that some people use ambitiously with a different kind of connotation than the denotation that I've provided there. And that is fine. I'm not particular on that word, but to dice it up a little bit. But title does matter. I mean, you know, frankly speaking, you know, if somebody's giving you financial advice, you don't know who they are and you're just kind of passively listening, and then you walk away and somebody says, who is that? And, you know, well, that was the senior vice president of this large financial institution. Oh, okay. Well, now maybe I should listen. You know, who's that person? Oh, they built a company and sold it for $10 billion. Oh, well, wow. Yeah, I think I'm going to listen. They know how to make money, if that's what the thing was about. Okay. Somebody's giving you advice and they're saying something, and you walk away and you say, who is that? Oh, that person is the, you know, most renowned psychologist living today. Well, my goodness, I probably should go back and listen more. Or theologian talking about religious advice. Whatever it happens to be, you know, if a person has a title which backs up the topic that they're speaking of, you're going to be more inclined to want to listen. Now, this is a bit dangerous, too. There are, you heard me have no shortage of criticism on Ivy League schools making people less intelligent, not less intelligent so much as just kind of willfully stupid, because you have a person with influence because of their title, maybe even their appearance, maybe their vocabulary, particularly their convictions. Okay. So they're using all these things to be influential, which, by the way, this is a great way of illustrating that I'm not saying always goodness comes out of this, right? Which is why a lot of, you know, nefarious characters will use these same tactics, because they make a presumption of virtue, even though it's a Trojan horse for distributing vice, right? But they'll have a title, and that title gives them a certain amount of influence. And a lot of students will say, well, my professor is a professor of such and such at such and such institution. So therefore, everybody else, you must be wrong because they're in higher education and telling me this, which is why, again, we need to be grounded so that we are not, you know, we're talking about being the influencer here, but we want to make sure that we're not influenced by a manipulative influencer who is using things as tactics as opposed to authenticity with who they are.
We're coming up to the end of the list here, Dave. What is number seven?
Well, the seventh one is financial status. And this is also an important one. There are a lot of people who will take the position of money is bad. They'll say, you know, that, you know, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter heaven. And of course, that's a misunderstanding of the reading. It is not to say that, you know, money makes you bad. It's the love of money that is the problem. And it's a, see, the other thing, too, you've heard me say this before, Nico, on the show, but this is a real thing. There's nothing in the Bible or the catechism which says that if your house is bigger than 1500 square feet or 3500 square feet or 10,000 square feet, or that if you drive this type of car or wear this particular watch, that now you're going to hell. It's not about that. What it does say is we need to be detached from these things. And that's the thing that matters. Why is this important? It's important to know that you can do good things with money. And in order to be magnificent, as they say, you can do magnificent things in many different ways in life. But one of the things that magnificence represents is the ability to do good things with your money. And when you have money, people will listen to you. Who's funding this? So-and-so over there. Well, what do they want us to do? I'll go ask. You know, it really ends up being kind of that simple. Why? Because if you cut off the funding, you cut off the project. And so that person has influence. They have influence to get things done that others can't get done. And how many people sit around saying, I wish I could make a difference, just that I don't have the money to do this project. I need to go ask somebody who has the money. Well, okay, what does that person obviously have now? They have influence. And also, to a large degree, it says they, you know, by the way, there are people that have just won their money or inherited their money. But I read a statistic. Do you remember what this, because we talked about it on one of the Duran Dunn Man shows. It was something about the percentage of millionaires or billionaires in the United States. I think it was billionaires in particular. It was something like 90 some odd percent of them did not come from money. And they built their wealth. And so the assumption that because somebody has money that they, you know, were given a silver spoon in life and inherited it is a little disingenuous toward a lot of people who do have money. And so what are you making the assumption of? Well, they must have done something right. They made some good decisions, at least financially, to get there. And again, we can all point out all sorts of very wealthy people who are living relatively corrupt lives. So none of these is really a litmus test. If there were a litmus test, I would put it on conviction. I would say that the one thing that is pretty universal for motivated, attractive, and influential people is that they have conviction. And one of the reasons that that's such a universal thing is because it is something, frankly speaking, that both good and bad, manipulative and righteous leaders use, is conviction. Now, what's really interesting, though, is that to the degree that a person's, you know, whole premise, the whole thing that they have conviction in is a lie, it will break down. So if a person believes, or I should say, if a person knows something is a lie, they can only act like they have conviction in it. And their ability to be influential is dramatically reduced. And it now is all about the facade with their vocabulary, their looks, their appearance, their money, all these things around it, because they're classically big hat, no cattle. So that's why I'm saying this. You know, if a person really believes something, they actually have conviction. It can be a wrong or a bad idea, and it's going to attract a lot of people. If they don't actually have conviction in it, but they have a manipulation and they're acting like they have conviction, they're going to attract, generally speaking, weaker minded people. And this is the interesting thing about the way these things actually play out. And so they all do matter, but this is not a course of you must be all of these things or you must not be all of these things. But it's just a matter of, listen, hey, if I want to up my game and be influential, I better be neat. I should get in shape. I should have an increased level of vocabulary. I should make sure that my family status is in order, or at least that I value these things and I'm working toward them, no matter how broken they've been in the past. That I have conviction, actual conviction, backed up by reasons to have it. That if I want to be influential in certain areas, I should increase my credibility. So my title, or at least the description of who people are, my CV, my bio, says something, even if it's not an official title. And my financial status, if I want to influence that, people is there. These things all help. Yet we are not all called by way of vocation to each one of them in particular, although we're called to several universally.
Yeah, this is a great list. And I think even though it's not exhaustive, it's definitely a good way to examine your own life, do an examination of conscience, if you will, with, or even just yourself, with this list on a weekly, biweekly, even monthly basis. So up next, we have Dr. Sean O'Meara going into the different theories and philosophies and studies that he himself has actually conducted in both, diet, nutrition, exercise, and how that plays a role in his faith and the faith of other people. We'll be back with the Dave Durant Show after this short break. Welcome back to the Dave Durant Show. Our guest this week is Dr. Sean O'Meara. Dr. Sean is an incredible person, man of faith, and he has done over a decade's worth of research and studying chronic illnesses and how nutrition and exercise can actually help combat and prevent those. We have the full-length interview on Dave's YouTube channel at Durant on Demand, but without further ado, Dave, take it away.
First of all, doctor, I got to tell you, it is great to be with you. And, you know, it's always interesting when I meet somebody and I want to refer to them as doctor because they hold such a high level of respect and education, and they have earned that at the highest level. But then when I meet somebody like you and they say, just call me Sean, that actually is like one of those things that says, okay, great. I've got this person that's highly educated with this great background, and your background is fantastic. And yet they're humble about what they do. But I'm going to refer to you as doctor on the program because that's really what we're talking about here. And that's what needs to take place. I wouldn't mind if you wouldn't, if you could just go into a brief amount of your history that wouldn't have been in your formal introduction, you think that is relevant for how you got to where you are right now and why we're talking. So that'd be great.
Sure. So, you know, like many people, you know, I've lived lives where there's been good times and bad times. So not part of my biography is the fact that I had a bad childhood. And it was really wasn't until I was in my 50s, probably about 55, that I had insights why my childhood was so bad. I knew it was bad, but really it was the product of a father who served his country at the age of 15, stepped forward and entered the military in World War II. So he's on a ship at the age of 16 with kamikaze pilots coming in, and he just had PTSD. I didn't know that he had PTSD. I just thought, you know, hey, we're a screwed up family. But what happened was I was a kid, you know, a youngster, and I really a toddler, and I never asked my father for help. I was terrified of my father because of his PTSD and his anger and things like that. But, you know, just things turned out that I figured out from a young age how to solve problems. I didn't have a dad to go to. So rather than falling apart in my life, I just learned on my own from a very early age how to troubleshoot and how to make things better. And I think that is an interesting aspect to my life because it's given me my bend today, which is I just love to fix things and improve things. And so when I became a physician after doing all these other things, it became natural for me to fix human bodies. But I was less attracted to making money off those bodies and more interested in really just making them better. So
your faith is very important to you, too. This is something that I find, very appealing to the idea that you would include the whole person. And you said before the most important part of your physical being, right, matters. But then you said the most important part is your soul. Talk more about how your faith influences the way you see medicine and the way you help patients.
Yeah, so my faith really is the most important part of my life. And I see it as a valuable addition to my life. You know, when our faith is appropriately aligned and understood, it's a positive force factor to improve the quality of our life. People with faith, by and large, just live better lives, and they're able to endure, have better resilience for the tragedies of life, the things, the ups and downs that happen. So what I try to do with any of my clients I work with, help them to understand, too, that if they have faith, that it's an exploitable extra force and influence in their life. So one of the things I believe as a Christian, I'm a very devout Catholic, that our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. St. Paul writes in Corinthians that, do you not know that your body is not your own? It is a temple of the Holy Spirit. And so what I help people understand that have faith is that you should look at your body as a temple of God. It's not your body. It's God's temple. His Holy Spirit resides in there. So does your soul. So you're kind of like a tenant. You know, you occupy this house. God creates this incredible mansion. You could never have the skill sets ever create something as beautiful as your body. You inherit as a baby, and it's probably the healthiest you'll ever be. And for most people, it's all downhill after that and start falling apart. And so that's why babies are so cute, is because they're just health. That's what you're looking at. And so your temple of God is the Holy Spirit in there. Your soul's in there. But then for most people, if we're honest, we take over that house and we forget that God's in there for a lot of the time. We forget it's God's house and we start living the way we want. So you got pizza boxes in there, bottles of beer. We're at parties. We had holes being kicked in the wall, places being filled up with all sorts of debris and falling apart. And then when you realize that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, then you start living correctly, taking care of that body, fixing it up. It's being a better custodian. You know, living, and instead of living pursuing gluttony and pleasure, that selection pleasure, that you start living in a way to optimize the temple of God, that his radiance shows better and you can serve him better. You're more capable. You can be that servant of God that you need to be. You can be a better leader of an organization. You can head up your family better. You can influence your children better and your children's children's better. We've just gotten away from the appreciation of health, and so much of it is faith. So I like to see the three critical areas a man or woman to work on is health optimization. Make sure that they're optimizing their temple of God, optimizing their faith, growing in faith, and making sure that faith is helping you to keep in order your body. And the third thing is wealth optimization, that you're hunting successfully, bringing home meat. That doesn't mean you got to go and start an Amazon and be a billionaire, but it means you must provide meat for yourself and for your family. So there's kind of like a three-legged tier. And I know you speak about the six spinning plates, very similar type of principles. But I think when we live in balance with faith, we become better hunters and we become healthier people that help us hunt even better. So these three factors are, I think, are really key to helping people live in the type of life, you know, where they continue to improve. And let's face it, probably the past 20,000 years, humanity has declined because of chronic disease. Previous to that, we didn't have chronic disease when we did CTs and MRI scans of Paleolithic humans. They were more like wild animals of today. They just don't have the chronic disease that we have. We're the only species today that's filled with chronic disease. And I think the church and believers, people that have faith, they've lost the sight and advantages available to them of improving their health. And business leaders, the same thing. So I love your show. I love how you work with people and challenge them to live better. And that's why I approached you. I was like, gosh, I really need to speak with Dave.
You know, I love that you did too, because we have more in common when we talked offline on some of these other philosophies. You know, Leading Giants, the company itself, the subtitle is The Influence Mastery Company. And we talked to this before, and it's so funny. If you're going to really want to influence people, and this ties to faith, it ties to physical health, it ties to all the things we're talking about. If you really want to influence somebody, it is a very holistic type of thing. That's why, you know, even the mobsters, right? They go to church, and even politicians that really don't believe in God, they'll go to church and they'll make sure there's a camera on them. They'll act like they've got a great family, even if they don't have a great family life. Why? Well, if you have a great family, it means that others love you and you love them and you'll sacrifice them and you're trusting. If you believe in God, there's an aspect of humility that is automatically kind of understood. You know, we obviously know that if a person does have faith life, you talked about being better at things, they're going to be honest, they're going to be hardworking, they're going to be diligent. All of these things that people subscribe to what it means to actually be a Christian. And the problem, of course, is that when Christians claim to be Christians, they don't act like that and it creates a whole scandal. But the idea of when they do, you've got all these good things out of it. Well, you can remove religion from all of that and just say these behaviors lead to high level success. But here's another one. Somebody sees a person that's in shape. They say, you look good. They're actually interested in the opinion of a person because not because they're a better looking person than somebody else by way of natural traits of natural beauty, but because they are healthy. And you see how healthy they are. And that healthy person, it says discipline. It says effort. It says, you know, obviously self-control. And those things are unconsciously attractive to people. It also says something, going back to what you were saying before, that animals have these really quick, intense physical experiences, like running away from a predator or wrestling a predator off. It also does, when you're physically healthy, say, this person has the ability to be dangerous. And I respect that. There's something about all of these things that actually affect influence. They come together. And any comments on that?
Yeah. So one comment I'd have is biology. It's really science. The reason why those things are attracted to us is because there's a principle called imprinting that gets transferred from earlier earlier forms of that organism and gets stored as imprinting in our brain and influences subsequent generations down the road. And so imprinting is in that particular aspect why we're attracted to healthier people that are attractive looking, because they're more disciplined, they hunt well, they're better performers. The reason that's attracted to us is, get ready for this, because they could help us live better. Mm-hmm. And we have a drive within us to live better and be better. And we need to pay attention to that. And people that look good, perform well, and are healthy are attractive to us because we think if we pay attention to them, they can help improve our quality of our lives. So innately within a man or woman, a good person, is a desire to always improve. And so I beseech and try to exhort everybody listening when I get around them and give talks that you can be so much more effective as an influencer, as a leader, whatever it is, as a husband, a wife, as a father or a mother to your children, or as a leader of a company, is if you optimize your health and improve your appearance, improve your performance, your employees, your charges, people that look up to you are going to pay way more attention. And then secondly, are more inclined to do what you do. So an interesting observation I have, and I think you probably agree, you're six years younger than I am. But when I grew up in respecting the elderly, paying attention to them. Today, you know, there's not much respect for the elderly people. A sad thing, people sit in these nursing homes. When the door opens up, everybody turns and look to see if it's somebody coming to visit them. It's super sad. And then they look away when they realize there's this longing. Well, you know, people aren't visiting the elderly as much anymore today. And it's not the younger generation's fault. It's the older generation's fault, because they're riddled with chronic disease. They don't look good. They don't perform well. And so those younger minds tell them, this person cannot teach me how to live better. If you're listening today, don't let that happen to you. Purpose to live as best, the best life you possibly can, to be as healthy as possible, so that people go and listen to you, pay attention to you, and follow you, even when you're older. And it's the silverback, older, gray-haired, salt-pepper, male or female, that we should be paying attention to. Young people look good because they have good genetics. Old people look good because they live good lives.
It's good habits.
Difference. And so you want to pay attention to the older alpha with gray hair, the older alpha female with gray hair, wisdom, experience. Their bodies and their performance show that they live well, and then they can impart that knowledge. So I hope this conversation will help people to be attracted to the value of doing that, and not just be selfish about it. We're called to live noble lives, to help make contributions to our species. And we've got to stop living the selfish, pleasure-filled life. Pizza, you know, crappy food, laying around, not taking care of your bodies, and respecting the gift that health is. It's meant to enjoy for a lifetime. And so you should get to your retirement and accumulated enough wealth and preserved and grown enough health that you can enjoy that, and have faith to help you all along the way maximize both of those, and maximize every year of your life, including in your retirement, so you can influence and share those principles with other people, just like you do, Dave.
Yeah, this is amazing. I could go for another hour or 2 hours or 3 hours. And in fact, I'm going to come visit you. I'm going to get these scans done. I'm going to spend 5 hours with you on how I can make these improvements. And I'll probably come back and let the audience know how that goes, already knowing that I have benefited by some of these things as well already. So you've been a fantastic guest. I am really thrilled to have you here. And I just want to let everybody know, I really encourage you to dive in and take a look. How can people get a hold of you? Where's the best to get the information that you can
share? Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn at Dr. Sean O'Mara, DrSeanOmara. I use the same screen name for Instagram, for X, Twitter, YouTube, and now even TikTok. I'll do whatever I can to try to reach people with this important message. And I also have a website, just my name, www.drseanomara.com. So people can follow me and get my content. I put a lot of these tips that we discussed today, Dave, pinned on my social media account, so people can get that in detail and track it and follow it. And anybody's really motivated and wants to optimize as quickly as possible, they can find out information on how to work with me.
Yeah, and we'll put some links below too. And like I always say, I'm especially saying it this way, if you do what the doctor says, you can be a giant and we can go slay some dragons together.
Tune in next week to the Dave Durand Show on Relevant Radio, Saturdays at 1 p.m. Central Time, and the podcast version is available 1 hour after airing. We'll see you all next week. God bless.